जय राधा मदाभा कुंज बिहारी मदाभा कुंज बिहारी जय राधा मदाभा कुंज बिहारी गोपी जना बालाभा गिरिवर धारी जया गोपी जना बालाभा गिरिवर धारी शोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजना जशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजना जमुना पीरा भनाचारी जमुना तीरा भनाचारी जया राधा मदाभा कुंज बिहारी जय राधा मदाभा कुंज बिहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्रीमद् हिज़्वाइंग्वैसैसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्रीमद् हिज़्वाइंग्वैस भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज शिल प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki, Granth Raj Shriman Bhagavatam ki, Itai Gaura Premanandi. O glories to the assembled devotees, O glories to the assembled devotees, O glories to the assembled devotees, O glories to Sishi Guru and Shiguranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Shrimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, the Summon Bonon, Chapter 12, the Killing of the Demon Agasura, Text 29 and 30. Text 29. Tadagana chada deva bhajadha heti chukrusu jahri shurje chakam syadhya kanaupastva gabhandhava. Translation: when Krishna entered the mouth of Agasura, the demigods hidden behind the clouds exclaimed, "Alas, alas! But the friends of Agasura like Kansa and other demons were jubilant. Text 30. Tachutva Bhagavan Krishnas Tvabhyaja Sarvabatsakam Churnichi Kirsi Churniki Churnichi Kirsir Atmanam Tarasa Babridhe Gale Tachutva Bhagavan Krishnas Tvabhyaja Sarvabatsakam Churnichi Kirsir Atmanam Tarasa Babride Gale Tachutva Bhagavan Krishnas Tvabhyaja Sarvabhaksakam Churnichi Kirsir Atmanam Tarasa Babride Gale Christian Tachutva Bhagavan Krishnas Tvabhyaja Sarvabhakshakam Churnichikirsar Atmanam Tarasa Babride Gale Tachutva Bhagavan Krishnas Tvabhyaja Sarvabhaksakam Churnichikirsar Atmanam Tarasa Babride Gale That exclamation of Haha Sutva Hearing Bhagavan The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna Lord Krishna To Indeed Abhyajaha Never vanquishable, sa arbhatsakam, along with the cowherd boys and the calves, churni chikir soho, of that demon who desired to smash within the abdomen, atmanam. Personally, himself, Tarasa, very soon, Babridhe, enlarged Gale within the throat. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When the invisible Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna heard the demigods crying, Alas, alas, from behind the clouds, he immediately enlarged himself within the demon's throat, just to save himself and the cowherd boys, his own associates, from the demon who wished to smash them. Purport. Sure are the acts of Krishna. Such are the acts of Krishna. Paritranaya sadunam vina sajya chatuskritam Bhagavad Gita 4.8 By enlarging himself within the throat of the demon, Krishna suffocated and killed him, and at the same time saved himself and his associates from imminent death and also save the demigods from lamentation. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Ramapada Swami Iti Namine. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Shatarine Vancha Kalpataru Vyasha Kripa Sindhu Vyaiva Chapatitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So many things Krishna can accomplish by one action. When he was thinking, how can I kill this demon and at the same time save my friends? And now add to that is also the demigods, that if we recall, Krishna descended into this world because of the demigods' tremendous distress, specifically of Mother Earth, who in the form of a cow approached Lord Brahma for being relieved of the overburden that was caused by so many demons that were present at that time, causing a great havoc. In general, demons disrupt the eternal principles of religion. It's explained that Dharma is the eternal principles of religion. So Dharma cannot be degraded because it's eternal. But Dharma does become obscure by the influence of the demons, so appears to decline. But in reality, it's obscure. It's explained that it's like the light of the sun is always there, but it appears to be dark when the light of the sun is covered by thick clouds. So then there is no light. But in reality, it's just a cloud that is covering the light. So similarly, by the influence of the demons, then there is this obscurity of this, the Dharma, the eternal principles of religions, becomes obscure. And naturally, the devotees suffer in this situation. Is not only being harassed by the demons in general, but also the fact that the devotees cannot freely act in their devotion to the Supreme Lord. So during those times, the Lord descends. Sometimes the question is, well, you know, we heard yesterday that by his own potencies, Parasha Shaktir Vidadaitu, what is it, Parasha Shaktir, oh, I forgot the line. But by his potencies, by his unlimited potencies, he can achieve whatever he desires. So he doesn't even have to make an effort. His potencies can do the job. So why did the Lord have to descend himself to actually take care of this situation of demons disrupting the universal order and obscuring the principles of religion? His energies are completely capable of taking care of that. And what to speak of his energies, also his devotees by himself can take care of that. Either great sages or Rajarsis, saintly kings, they're powerful to be able to take care of many of these situations. So the explanation is that the Lord principally descend is to reciprocate with his devotees. So Prabhupada quoted the verse 4:8 from the Bhagavad Gita, Paritranaya Shadunam Vinashaya Chaduskritam Dharma Sanstapanataya Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. That the Lord descends every millennium to reestablish the principles of religion, to annihilate the demons, and to give pleasure to the devotees. So it's explained that to give pleasure to the devotees is a primary reason because of for the Lord's descent. And the secondary reason is to cure the demons and to reestablish the principles of religion. He accomplished that simultaneously, but the main reason is to reciprocate with the devotees. And the reciprocation is quite extraordinary because it goes into so many different levels, and these all things happen simultaneously. How he reciprocates with so many different levels of devotion and relationships that are there with his devotees. One extraordinary feature of this particular pastime is the relationship that he has with the cowherd boys, which is extremely touching and beautiful. Because just to have that type of close and the confidence that the cowherd boys have in Krishna first, and also how they thrill just to see Krishna perform these amazing feats of killing, you know, very dangerous, terrible, gigantic demons. They get, you know, it gives them the thrill. The type of expressions that they had when they saw this demon Agasura. And immediately was, you know, a source of thrill that, okay, let's see how Krishna killed this demon, basically. And they went directly into the mouth of the demon, confident that Krishna will come and save them. And this was going to be like an adventure. So they were, like I said, yesterday, completely fearless. And Krishna reciprocated with that. Now, in the transcendental world of Vrindavan, Krishna reciprocates with his most intimate devotees, and specifically the relationships that are there of Dasya. Actually, mostly the most intimate are Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. The friendship, the parental, and the conjugal relationships that are there in Vrindavan. So, but there's different flavors and reciprocations that are there. With the cowherd boys, they witness most of all these amazing feats of Krishna. They were always there when Krishna was killing demons. In fact, Krishna was killing demons daily. It was like a regular thing. So it was, you know, almost like okay, what's coming on today, you know, type of thing. And one can only imagine a circumstance like that in which in a daily basis some inconceivable danger will come upon you. It's like living in a war zone or in terror. You don't know what's coming, but you know there is a particular terror attack on you and your people. So you don't know where the bomb is going to drop. You don't know where the soldiers are going to appear. So, but as far as the cowherd boys and the inhabitants of Vrindavan, life is going on like anything. You know, the boys, the description of the childhood pastimes that they're performing, playing completely carefree and super happy, just like children in the most safe space that they can, in a playground. Completely carefree. No danger is there. They're fully protected. Just like children playing in the playground with the parents sitting, you know, close by. So that type of security was created by Krishna. So the cowherd boys were able to witness all these things in a daily basis, and for them it was a thrill. And they, after Krishna will kill the demons, they will celebrate like anything, praising Krishna and compose these beautiful poems that they will go on and sing loudly to everybody. Like Kyle likes to compose poems and he sings loudly to everybody about things that he sees like that. So the cowherd boys will be composing these poems of Krishna's activities and feats of, you know, killing all these demons. And the rest of the inhabitants of Vrindavan will be like, whoa, you know, hearing this and getting really into enjoying these poems, sometimes thinking, well, maybe the boys are making this, or Krishna is doing all these things, but actually it's Lord Narayan who is saving Krishna. So they're trying to understand all the things from their perspective, because Krishna didn't do many of these feats in front of the elders, because it will be devastating for Mother Yasoda. We see that few of them were in front of Mother Yasoda than when Krishna chastises the Kaliya serpent. Then all the parents were there and they were dying. Mother Yasoda, I mean, Nanda Maharaj was ready to go into the waters of the Yamuna, who were completely poisoned. He was ready to enter there to fight the serpent to protect Krishna. He was dying of anxiety and fear. Mother Yasoda, just from anxiety and fear, she passed out. So it was a terrible anguish. And so the same with the cowherd girls, Shrimati Radharani and like that. So a different type of you know, relationship, equally exalted, but there's a particular flavor with the cowherd boys. For the cowherd boys was just enjoying the thrill of seeing Krishna performing this thing. He was, you know, the greatest of all of them, and they admire him, and they celebrate Krishna's strength. So, and they were completely trusting that they were always safe. Krishna will always save them. There was no situation that was too dangerous for him, from them, because they always will be protected by Krishna. So, Krishna explains that he does that. Ye yata man prapadyante tanstataibe bhajamyaham. So he have a particular way of reciprocating with all the devotees according to the level of intimacy of devotion that they have. So the demigods, on the other hand, they also were devotees, and Krishna was present in the world because of assuring the demigods that he will be there to protect them. So Krishna simultaneously also pacified the devotees, the demigods. But the demigods, in difference from the cowherd boys, they were very afraid. They thought that the demon can harm Krishna in some way, because when Agasura closed the mouth and swallowed Krishna, then the demigods were in tremendous anxiety, thinking and expressing the alas, alas. So how one who understands Krishna's position, that is infallible, that he can never be vanquished. Avyayan is the word that is used in the verse. He can never be vanquished. So someone who understands Krishna's position, that can never be vanquished, how is that one becomes affected or anxious about Krishna's situation? The reason is because at one point affection it can cover one's full understanding, and so one may have those moments of doubts. The cowherd boy have no doubts in Krishna's position. The demigods may go through a point of, you know, oh, what's going to happen? It's unknown. So, different than the doubts that Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj experience, because Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj, their understanding of Krishna as their child that they have to protect was overriding anything else, any conception of Krishna's position as the Supreme Controller and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For the demigods, it's different. The demigods will have this mixed understanding. It was very difficult to conceive that the Supreme Lord, Narayan, their supreme worshipable Lord, was in the form of this beautiful, innocent child. So we see how within the demigods themselves, some of them try to solve this confusion thing by testing. So we know Indra manifested very grossly his confusion, and Lord Brahma, we're going to see in the next pastime, that he was also testing, you know, is this right? Can he be Lord Narayan? I mean, all the signs are there, but it is very difficult to understand that he will be in that form that's so charming, so innocent, so simple, and performing these human-like activities that is very difficult to understand, even for the demigods. However, Krishna reciprocated. He protected all the devotees. So Prabhupada said that he freed the demigods from lamentation. And then in terms of the demons, Krishna also reciprocates accordingly. And the fact is that one may say, well, the demons want Krishna as an enemy, so Krishna acts as an enemy and Krishna kills them. So now the question is, well, what we say is that Krishna has then enemies and friends, so meaning that just like us, he also discriminates. So he also has, he is not equal to all, because he have an enemy, he have a friend. So that's not an equal thing. But from the transcendental perspective, Krishna is equal to everyone, and he simply reciprocates accordingly, but according to the desire of the particular living entity. But equally, when he comes into contact with anyone in any type of reciprocation, Krishna elevates. So even for the demons, Krishna provides liberation. So we're going to see how Agasura becomes liberated from this material world just by Krishna having killing him. By Krishna's touch, he becomes free, and is also, which was also a very surprising thing that even Maharaj Parikshit have to ask, how is this possible? This terrible demon obtained liberation that all great sages are searching for, and are performing austerities and devoting their life to the process of self-realization and following the religious principles established in the Vedas, and these demons that were completely against religious principles, that attack religious principles and that become a threat and harass the devotees, how is that they also achieve this? They also achieve this liberation. So that will be explained. That is Krishna's mercy that is equally disposed for everybody. Even the demons receive this mercy. So when Krishna says that he reciprocates accordingly, but in fact, the fact is that everyone follow his path in all respects. Everyone at the end comes to him. So it's a matter of time. Krishna is very respectful to the time that each individual have to develop that choice to take his shelter. So he leave that. He give us free will. And with that free will, he respects our free will, which is something quite wonderful. Sometimes, because of being devoid of transcendental knowledge, sometimes we conditioned souls may not be able to appreciate this wonderful quality of Krishna, we may think that he's callous. But the fact is that he's very kind. There's to deal with people. I mean, he's the greatest example of caring, that it comes with respect. Yesterday we were talking about that, service and respect. Krishna is a great example of that, because he doesn't force anyone. He allows the natural evolution of that desire. Everybody have the perfect their timing. There's not a one, how you say, cookie mold, you know, like a cookie mold that fits everyone. One thing fits everyone, so everybody have to be like this. There's no such a thing. What it works for one doesn't work for another one. So you have to allow that natural evolution, because it's a matter of free will. Free will is ingrained in each one of us. So we cannot force, I cannot force someone else's free will. Is their will, is their free will to choose to actually, you know, connect or to choose, I choose Krishna. It has to come naturally. And Krishna is respectful of that. And Krishna instructs us in the Bhagavad Gita, many times he instructs Arjuna, you have to respect that. He says a sadhu doesn't disturb the mind of the non-believers, of the regular people. He says you don't disturb their mind, but you engage them in works of devotion in some way, but you don't disturb them. You don't disturb, because it's disrespectful. That's why sometimes people are against religious zealousness, which is, you know, in one sense, you know, those who are devout in a particular religion, they have this desire to help others and to save others. But an immature approach to fulfill that desire is that one wants to force people to make the particular choice, and people react to that. In general, you know, it's like you feel that someone, you know, these zealous religionists are being condescending. They're treating you in a condescending way. We experience that in every level. We experience that in our community of Krishna consciousness. Sometimes we feel, you know, that we're being looked down like that. And that puts you off. That put off, you know, you feel that in one sense disrespected. And then, you know, oh, so this is not good. People become discouraged. So it's a sign of immaturity, simply. And we follow, if we, as we grow to understand Krishna's example, Krishna's instructions, then we can also do like that. Be very respectful of people's process, and share with respect. So Krishna reciprocates like that. He's equally kind, and he is in so many ways bringing people gradually back to him. Everyone follow his path. Mama Bharatma Nubartante. Everyone, every man follows his path. So as that say that every road leads to Rome. Some may be direct, some may be quite indirect, but everybody will get there. So it's a matter of time. Just to end, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, there is a special arrangement, a very powerful arrangement to awaken people's desire just by the contact of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan mission. Then it's such a powerful purifier that even that it transformed naturally. It established a natural attraction to anyone when done, again, following Krishna's and Lord Chaitanya's mood, which is of, you know, Lord Chaitanya tell us too, to cultivate that sense of respect, you know, in the manifestation of humility, tolerance, respect to all others, and don't expect respect to yourself. So that mood. Then we can chant the holy name constantly, which is the Param Vijayate, the supreme method or the supreme form of bringing Krishna consciousness to the world. I stop here. Any comments or questions? Raktak Prabhuji. It's coming.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, I want to appreciate what you said today in class. Because sometimes you do get a discouraging feeling when, through association with some devotees, when they do look down on you in a condescending way, and that's the only way they seem to communicate with you. And there is a difference when there are some elevated devotees, and they're really purified, and they have such an open heart that you don't feel like you're on the defensive. You just feel their love, their spiritual shakti coming from them. So I want to just thank you for this, for bringing this. This is an important class, and I want to thank you for bringing these topics up.
Thanks, Rakta Prabhu. Hare
Krishna.
Very well.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for your class. You made really nice point. One side point that came to mind, I wasn't originally going to make this, but you were mentioning we shouldn't disturb, don't disturb, just try to engage them in Krishna consciousness, don't really try to disturb them. And I remember Jitendra Prabhu mentioned the other day that Prabhupada says, naturally they're already disturbed. And one pastime that came to mind was Haridas Thakur. He was minding his own business, chanting the holy name. And Ramachandra Khan said, he's disturbing me. Why? Because he's just minding his own business, chanting and taking my popularity. He was doing nothing, just minding his own business. And so there's a nice quote by Buddha. The same thing Krishna says in chapter 14 of the Gita. But Buddha says, they blame one who is silent. They blame one who speaks a lot. They blame one who speaks a little. There is no one on earth who isn't blamed. As a solid rock is not shaken by the wind, wise people fought to not amiss praise and blame, or honor and dishonor. And so we see Haridas Thakur and Nityananda. They never gave up preaching Krishna consciousness like Sajagai Madai, people like them, on the risk that they'll disturb them. They're already disturbed, so the most important thing is our motivation, you know. So if we don't have the proper motivation, then we'll be disturbed. So that's the most important thing, whether or not we're disturbed. And we won't be able to maintain our Christian conscience unless we have love and respect for the people we're preaching to, if we're doing it on the air. So this kind of goes to my original point. It's kind of a point related to Raptop Prabhu. Raptop Prabhu was mentioning sometimes the only way people could communicate is through, you know, being condescending. Of course, we've all gone through those stages. We all have a divine and demoniac nature, so we've all, you know, gone through every situation and are going through our ups and downs from both sides of the spectrum. So this, I'd like to relate this to this verse you mentioned, Yaya Tamam Prabhantya Tase Tam Tatai Bhajamiham. Krishna reciprocates according to our desire. And this reminds me of a quote. It says, life is like a trumpet. If you don't put anything into it, then you won't get anything out of it. So we see this verse, Prabhupada mentions that Krishna came to kill the demons. And also teachers, they came to kill the demoniac mentality of children. And what's their demoniac mentality? Ignorance. And you were mentioning that Krishna, he respects our timetable. However, Krishna does warn us that the consequences of not getting serious about your Krishna consciousness as soon as possible, because if a child doesn't learn the lessons from the teacher, what's the child going to do? The child is going to burn the house down. The child is going to burn everyone else down. So Krishna says, yes, I respect you, but if you exploit others, then I'm going to have to intervene. So you might as well get serious about your Krishna consciousness as soon as possible. And so we see that children, the reason, like I said, I relate this to Raptop Prabhu, is about communication. We see the teachers says, learn your ABCs and 1, 2, 3s, so you could communicate, so you can have harm. If you don't learn your ABCs, then you won't be able to communicate with anyone. And so that's what the Bhagavatam says. If you don't learn the language of love, then you won't communicate with anyone. Not even yourself. You can't even communicate happiness to yourself. So one of the last points I like to make is that this brings to mind what Radhanath Swami mentions in his autobiography. I was actually ironically reading this recently. It's on page 127, I believe. When he was traveling throughout India, he obviously met many people from different faiths. And one day he came across a Babaji named Kailash Baba. And Radhanath Swami says, while I was in India, Kailash Baba, he taught me what to do, what not to do, what to eat, what not to eat, what to wear, and what not to wear. So many things he taught me. And at the end of this paragraph, Radhanath Swami says, and we didn't even speak the same language. Yeah, and they communicated. Yeah. So the lesson I got from it is that just because people don't speak the same language, that doesn't mean they can't communicate. And on the flip side of the coin, just because people can speak the same language, that doesn't mean they can communicate. And so we see the Bhagavatam is meant for us to cultivate the language of love. And there's a nice verse in the Bible that says, if I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal like the cartels. That's all I sound like. Useless. And so my question is that, what are some steps we can move forward to develop the realization that actually, if we, just like a child, if a child doesn't learn the language, he's not hurting anyone but himself. So what are some steps we can move forward to gain the realization that if we don't learn a language of love, like you said, humility, tolerance, respect. Hiranyakashipu, his language was, everything is meant to go my way. But Lord Brahma said that language doesn't exist. That's a gibberish language. And so we see that when Hiranyakashipu, things didn't go his way, he spoke gibberish language. What is that? Envy, pride, vengeance. And he was miserable. So he's thinking, I'm hurting my others, but he was actually hurting himself. So what are some steps we can move forward to get serious about learning the language of love, about the Bhagavatam? Because if we don't, all our relationships, you know, are pretty messed up. But the most important relationship is the relationship with ourself. I've never seen anyone who looks happy, who is envious, who is intolerant, who is impatient. So what are some steps we can move forward to get serious about learning language of love before Krishna intervenes, you know, and really humbles us. So he, yes, he respects our timetable, but at the same time, if we want to exploit others and, you know, just be disrespectful to others, Krishna's going to step in, no doubt. So,
yeah, the whole system that is arranged in this world is to teach us and to bring us to the point of surrender to Krishna. So everything the whole universal manifestation is geared for that, you know. So this is like, you know, we hear from our teachers, this is like a big psychiatric, you know, hospital. So you have different levels of patients in this psychiatric ward, that some are really crazy, some are less crazy, and according to what you have a particular treatment that you have to follow. Obviously the ones that are more crazy, you need to apply, you know, much heavy duty treatment. So sometimes they have to be tied up in a crazy, how you call that a straight jacket, you know, and put in a room, padded room, so they don't hurt themselves. Sometimes, you know, sometimes they have to, you know, there's a more extreme type of treatment to deal with people's condition. So this world is like that, but at the end, everything is geared to heal. So for those who are super crazy, it's going to take longer than those who are less crazy. But we all sort of healing. So Krishna arranged the system like that. So in terms of to be fortunate to have come in contact with transcendental knowledge through the mercy of a devotee, like Srila Prabhupada brings of that, give us that gift, then, you know, one gets now at least a nominal understanding of how things are. So for us, now we can see, oh, why am I suffering? Now you get a clue. Okay, you're suffering because you're not in sync with the principles of the Krishna's instruction. So that's the cause of suffering. How can I get rid of that? So then we have more or less now a purpose for education. Say when we enter into school, our parents and society makes us understand, even from very early age, that education is necessary for us to be successful and happy, to have a, you know, the capacity to live a life, so you know, a wholesome life. So we go through the process of education, and through all the different things that we have to go through, of punishments and rewards that the system of education give us, the discipline that is there. And discipline means sometimes you get punished. We all experienced that in our education. There were times that, you know, sometimes we thought it was just, sometimes we thought it was unjust. But that whole experience of punishment and rewards then allows to go through more and more deeper into the process of education and preparing ourselves. So similarly, in all levels, in the process of education that we have right now, we can recognize as devotees when we are suffering or we are disturbed. But when we're disturbed, then we have at the end something, okay. I'm disturbed, okay, this devotee or this situation is causing me disturbance, but why am I disturbed? What is causing that disturbance internally for me? Then I start to look, my attachments, my this, my that, this condition, and this and that, and then, you know, I don't want to suffer. I hate doing it. I hate being in that position. So then you start to become serious. There's another aspect that allows to become serious too, which is we is actually experiencing love from devotees and from Krishna. It's a very tangible experience. It's our religion experience, and there's something that we feel from Guru and Krishna that allows to desire to go further and further. You know, so there's a combination of our experience of trying to become free from suffering, and at the same time, the beautiful feeling and experience of connecting with something divine. Isn't it? We all have that. That's why we're here still, regardless of, you know, whatever we have to go through. We, you know, that's what parandrishta nivartante, the higher taste. So, you know, we have to keep going. Anything else? All right, I stop here. Thank you. Garantarashimam Bhagavatam Ki Jai.